From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nicole Ogrisco with the news on This Day in Maine, Monday, April 28th, 2025. Maine State Representative Laura Libby is asking the U.S. Supreme Court to intervene after two lower courts denied temporary restoration of her voting and speaking rights. The First Circuit Court of Appeals denied Libby's motion for an expedited appeal in her ongoing lawsuit to end her censure by the Maine House of Representatives. A federal judge also denied a request to immediately restore Libby's ability to vote and participate in floor debates. Libby was censured in February for posting a photo of a high school transgender athlete while blurring the images of two other students to protect their identities. Libby has argued that the order violates her First and Fourth Amendment rights, but a federal judge ruled that House Speaker Ryan Fecteau's order is likely shielded by legislative immunity. Libby appealed that ruling to the First Circuit, but judges there ruled that she did not demonstrate a likelihood of success in her lawsuit or the need for an expedited appeal. The censure can be lifted if she apologized, but she has so far refused to do that. A national progressive group wants Maine to regulate the use of artificial intelligence in campaign ads and other political messages. Ilana Beller with the nonprofit group Public Citizen said two dozen states have passed laws aimed at addressing the use of AI in political communications. Those range from outright bans of so-called deep fakes to mandatory disclosure laws, like the one being considered by Maine's legislature. And Beller told lawmakers today that bills in other states received strong bipartisan support.
The technology is getting really, really good. Unfortunately, recent studies have shown that the majority of Americans at this point cannot determine what is a deepfake video versus what is real content when it's a high-quality deepfake.
A legislative committee is expected to hold a work session on the bill later this week. Researchers from the University of Massachusetts Amherst have found a new type of bacteria in rabbit ticks in Maine that's related to the pathogens that cause spotted fever infections in humans. Megan Porter with the Maine Center for Disease Control says rabbit ticks generally don't bite humans or pets, so the current threat to public health is low. There have been roughly 30 cases of spotted fever rickettsiosis in Maine over the past decade, which Porter says is also transmitted through dog ticks.
Almost every time we can trace those to people who have traveled out of state to a place that has those germs in the tick populations. And then they either get bitten by a tick there or they bring the tick back with them and it bites them and they get sick once they're back in Maine.
UMass Amherst scientists who collaborated with the University of Maine say they'll conduct further research to see whether the new bacteria strain is elsewhere in New England. A new three-year plan from Efficiency Maine will continue the state's push to reduce energy use from homes and businesses. And despite uncertainty about federal funding, the agency says it has resources to offer debates and other incentives to lower energy costs. Peter McGuire reports.
By 2028, the agency expects that it will help 38,000 homes exclusively use heat pumps. The plan includes funding for almost 10,000 weatherization upgrades and for advanced cooling and heating systems for schools and businesses. Efficiency Maine is suing to restore loan funding cut by the Trump administration. But it says its core incentives are funded through a regional greenhouse gas credit market and utility surcharges. The Mills administration has encouraged heat pumps as a way to get Maine homes to stop using heating oil and lower climate pollution. The governor has a goal of installing 175,000 heat pump units by 2027. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Peter McGuire.
The Greater Portland Council of Governments is laying off staff and pausing programs after losing access to multiple federal grants. Executive Director Christina Egan says the group has lost about $1 million so far. But she says even more money remains in limbo, including an $11 million award to boost broadband access.
We were given an award letter in January, and we've had no information and no contact from the awarding agency. So, you know, we're all on pause there.
Egan says the cuts have forced the group to eliminate six staff positions through a combination of layoffs and leaving some roles unfilled. She says the group is launching fundraising efforts to try to make up for some of the lost federal support. but that the level of uncertainty makes it hard to plan. The state's public access ombudsman says she found no evidence that a state agency acted in bad faith when it handed a $250,000 estimate to a television station seeking public records. But as Kevin Miller reports, she says an estimate that high points to other problems.
Earlier this year, the television station WMTW asked the Maine Department of Health and Human Services for 2 years' worth of records on payments to daycare businesses. The station was investigating complaints that reimbursements for children in the foster care system were often delayed, sometimes by months. But the department responded that it would take 4 years and more than $250,000 to complete the request, and that alarmed some state lawmakers. On Friday, the state's public access ombudsman, Brenda Keelty, told a legislative committee that she found no evidence that DHHS had inflated its figures. But Keelty says Maine's Freedom of Access Act becomes inaccessible to the public when the state's records maintenance systems are so cumbersome.
Anytime you get an estimate of this amount, it's a problem. Even if it's compliant with the statute, even if it's in good faith, because what it does is it's a barrier to access.
Keelty says the state should prioritize funding to make record-keeping systems easier to navigate and to hire staff dedicated to handle FOA requests. DHHS officials, meanwhile, told lawmakers that WMTW's request covered 86,000 invoices, and each invoice would have taken 7 minutes to print, redact, rescan, and upload. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Kevin Miller.
Lawmakers are considering a bill that would require legislative approval for the state to renew a contract to operate the Juniper Ridge landfill in Old Town. The bill comes amid debate over the proposed expansion of the landfill and a contract extension for Casella Waste Management, which currently operates Juniper Ridge. State Senator Mike Tipping says that the bill would give the public more input into management of the site.
Ensuring that before any other decisions are made about this major state-owned facility, that the legislature, and through them the people of Maine, would have a say.
The state projects that Juniper Ridge will run out of space in 2028, but then an expansion would extend its capacity until 2040. Casella is seeking to extend its contract, which expires in 2034, by 6 years. A Maine man has died while fishing for scallops off the coast of Massachusetts. The U.S. Coast Guard says it received a distress call Friday afternoon from the vessel 25 to Life after a rope snapped and struck two crew members. The agency says one had a concussion and possible broken ribs. The other, 26-year-old Jackson Marston of Addison, had a suspected broken neck and was intermittently unresponsive. As of Monday morning, a GoFundMe page has raised more than $90,000 for Marston's pregnant girlfriend and their one-year-old daughter. Catholic Charities Maine announced last week that it will be closing its Greater Bangor Refugee and Immigration Services office this summer. Caitlin Badion has more.
The organization said Friday that it would be closing the Refugee Services office as of June 30th. Other programs at the Greater Bangor location will remain open, as will refugee service offices in southern Maine. Catholic Charities Maine cites a loss of federal funding and the Trump administration's suspension of refugee resettlement as reasons for the closure. The Bangor area also has the smallest concentration of the agency's refugee clients. There have been no new arrivals since January 13th, and the organization has completed its 90-day resettlement services for all clients in the area. The group is working with other community organizations to support refugees' future needs and access to staff at its southern Maine offices. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Caitlin Badion.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Coming up on Maine Calling at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning, we'll revisit a conversation with Maine journalist and author Murray Carpenter about his new book, Sweet and Deadly, How Coca-Cola Spreads Disinformation and Makes Us Sick. I'm Nicole Ogrisco. Thanks for listening.